We're getting right now. Well, yesterday they waited till about 3 o'clock.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. We're about to start the afternoon workshops here in the Maritime Folklife area. And throughout the day, yesterday and tomorrow, we'll be holding these workshops at different times for about 25 or 30 minutes, talking about different topics that have to do with traditions of maritime communities. Traditions like making gear and using them, predicting the weather, knowledge, traditional knowledge about what you look for to find fish, shrimp, other types of things like that. All types of knowledge that's passed on informally, usually by word of mouth or by observation and imitation. And the subject of this present workshop, I think, is one of the most interesting and fascinating that we have in our program of workshops, and that has to do with storytelling. And you know, we're sitting in a situation that's not the usual one for telling stories. We're sitting here, strangers pretty much, although in the last day we've gotten to know each other a little bit. But all of you out there, for the most part, we don't know. And I'm sure when you tell stories, you're telling stories in a situation where you're comfortable, maybe in your workplace or your home, with people that are close to you, your coworkers, friends, and family. And that's the way it usually is with these fellows who are with me here today. Now, they're all fishermen. And, you know, fishing sometimes is characterized by periods of intense activity, sometimes followed by periods when you don't have too much to do. You're towing your net, and you got to wait 40 minutes or longer for your tow to be over. Or you're sitting maybe culling oysters together or heading shrimp, doing other types of activities where you're sitting close together with other people sharing work. And what naturally arises out of situations like this is telling stories to help you pass the time. So that's probably the more usual setting or context for storytelling in maritime communities, in the communities or actually on the boats. So I've asked these three fishermen to join me here today, and they've been kind enough to agree to share with you some of the stories that they know about. And already, since yesterday when we had a workshop like this, they've been talking about stories and I think getting a little more warmed up about stories that they know individually and all together. So let me introduce them to you. On the far right, over here in the green organized fisherman of Florida cap, is Glenn Philman of the fishing community of Steinhatchee on the Gulf Coast. And in the center is Captain Ray Singleton, who spent most of his fishing days in the community of Mayport on the Atlantic coast, east of Jacksonville. Sitting right next to me is Coaster Bougier from the community of Apalachicola, some say the oyster capital of the country, and I think they'd be right when they do say that. He's a retired shrimp fisherman, done a lot of other types of fishing, and spends most of his work time now making shrimp trawl nets for fishermen who fish for shrimp in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, I'd like to start with Glenn. I know he's been thinking about some of the stories that we talked about yesterday. Take her away.
Okay, I appreciate the opportunity and stand up and tell these stories that we hear that's brought up to us, you know. We always keep on our mind, you know, try to pass on because we're talking, you know, about history. So that's what I'm talking about. This is a story that was told to me a long time ago by a fella named Arthur Hires. I told this yesterday, but I want to tell it again because there's a lot of new faces out there. I don't know, like he says, like he told y'all, I'm from Steinhatchee. I don't know. How many of you ever been to Steinhatchee? Good, good. I see friends out there that I know, and I'm glad to see them. And we got it all down there. In other words, we got plenty of fishing. We got plenty of hunting, not too far away from town, you know. So we feel fortunate to live in that area. So if you hadn't ever been down there, come to see us sometimes when you can. Make it a special trip. Getting back on my story now that I was fixing to tell, in other words, this old man, he's dead and gone today. But I've always been, you know, I love to sit around and listen to older people tell me about things that happened years ago, you know. And they leave it up to me whether I believe it or not, you know. But I really, really enjoy, and I could sit there for, I guess, hours and hours at a time listening to them. But anyhow, this particular time I'm talking about, there was a place down there at that time was called Taylor's Cafe. And this old man, he was a good fisherman. There's no doubt about it. He was a good fisherman. And he come in there, and this lady, she made a mistake to ask him had he caught any fish. And I know that she had fouled up because I knowed it was coming. But anyhow, he told her, he says, "Yes, ma'am." He says, "I've got my cooler slammed full." She said, "Well, I don't understand it." Says, "I've been down here 2 days and we hadn't caught enough to eat." He said, "Well, like I say, I was looking for it, sitting there ready." He said, "Do you mind me looking at your bait, whatever you using to fish with?" She said, "No, not a bit in the world." And so she had to go down all the way down to the end of the dock, get her bait and bring it back up there, which took 10 or 15 minutes, you know. And this lady was serious now. So she brought her bait back up there, and he really didn't even look at it. He, you know, just took it and set it aside. And he told her, says, "I can see your problem right now." He said, "That no wonder you hadn't caught any fish." Says, "You have went somewhere and bought some meat skins that turn to the left when you're pulling them." And she says, "Well, what difference does that make?" Said, "Well, any time a fish bites your bait there, it just knocks him off. It screws him off." Says, "So what you need to do is go buy you some different bait and buy the meat skin that turns to the right, where when he bites it, it'll screw him on." And I walked out. I couldn't stand no more of it, you know. But anyhow, that poor lady went and hunted up her husband, drug all them youngs together, and she went to going from place to place trying to find a left-handed meat skin. Or a right-handed meat skin. Yeah. A right-hander, right. But I knew what she'd run into. There just wasn't none. You know, I'm kind of admirer, too, of people. We're talking, you know, directly about history, but I get a kick out of paying attention to people. And in other words, one particular afternoon when I was coming in from out in the bay crabbing, I crab for a living, I'm a commercial crabber, and I seen this fella coming down the river. He had on one of these caps, you know, it had all these scrambled eggs on it. You know what I'm talking about. He called himself a captain. Well, when it comes by, he waves at me, you know, and looks at me like I'm a fool, you know. But he's the one that's running the wrong side of the markers. In other words, he thinks I'm a fool, but he, you know, he's got all the education, the captain and all that, you know. It goes on down. I stop and look. So, tell you what type of fella he was. He is driving a pro boat, you know, and that's a fancy boat. In other words, they make them down in Crystal River. And they've all got two tanks on them, you know. And naturally, it's got a valve where you use out of one tank or the other. He give out a gas, and he didn't. You know what he done? Took his siphon hose and siphoned the gas out of the other one and put in that one. Now, this is a fisherman now. All right? So he goes on down the river a little bit. I'm sitting there watching him, you know. And I guess that he got a little gas in his boat or something, you know. So he turns on his bilge pump. You know what I'm talking about. Pump the water out. And bless God, he had this thing hooked up backwards. Instead of pumping the water out, he is pulling it in, you know. Now, you don't believe that. There ain't no way. There ain't no way to hook one up. I'm just cutting the fool with you. But if you hook the thing up, it'll turn backwards, but it also pump, by the way. But I'm just, you know, just trying to get you to believe something here that I can't make you do, I don't think. But anyhow, like I say, you know, in the commercial fishing interest. In other words, we enjoy getting around and telling old stories about things that happened years ago, you know. And down home, you can kind of, you know, back a long time ago, I remember when there was about 20 houses at Steinhatchee River. Now there's a lot of houses. If you happen to go down there, I'll tell you how to pick these people out. You know, about 70% of the people now down there are retirees that moved in, you know, from Georgia and places like that. But if you go down there, you've never been there, and you ask the fella, I don't care who he is, if you asked him, you know, what time the tide's going to be high, he says, I don't know. And you asked him where he caught his fish, he may say south, you know, but it's a long way from Steinhatchee, you know, right on south. Or he may say north, it's a long ways north. That's a commercial fisherman. In other words, you mark him down, because he ain't going to tell you nothing. Because that's his job, you know. All right? In other words, if you woke up to Pace's Marina or any of those fish camps down there, just stand around like y'all sitting there now, and you hear two men are talking, and they're talking, you know, just as hard as they can, and one of them says, did you catch any fish today? The other said, no, I didn't. He said, the commercial fishermen just caught them all. That's a sport fisherman. Now, that's the way it is. Now, if you drive down the road, you know, in Steinhatchee, and we got a few of them now, and you see houses just as thick as they can be. Now, that's people that's moved from way up the country. And they used to be living right close together. So they'll have 25 or 30 houses, you know, just as close as they can be. What they're used to is laying there and listening to the other one talk over in the next house, you know. So that's the type of people you're going to find at Steinhatchee. So, like I say, if you see us out there and we don't tell you nothing, that's a commercial fisherman. And that's what I've been, and that's been my heart's desire. Of course, I worked, had to go work on a public job one time because after I got married, I had responsibilities. And so I had to, you know, I had to meet them obligations, and I had to have a check every week. But it wasn't my heart's desire. I worked 20 years with Buckeye Cellulose and Foley Lumber Company. And I left them in 73 and went back to doing what I like to do. And today I'm a stone crabber and have been since 73. That's where I make my living. So I appreciate y'all's time. And
you forgot something. That fella's still up in that cypress tree. Now tell him about the cypress tree. Come on now.
You want me to take your time? You should.
That's right. There's no way I can top those. No way.
Well, since he's asked me, you know, I don't mind telling it because that's the way it was. But anyhow, Steinhatchee, you know, is real famous in the wintertime for its speckled trout. In other words, you can go down there in November, December, you know, January, and there's so many people in that river at times. If they'd let you, you could walk across the river and never hit the water from boat to boat. I've got friends here now. They'll verify this for me. They get so thick down there, they go to throwing out their rods, you know, and they don't know where it's going. They hook one another by the ears, you know, and pull him in, things like that, you know. Doctors make a lot of money down there. But anyhow, this old man, same man I was talking about a while ago, he was out there fishing, and the fog broke down. And he was catching them, we call them old mammy trout, you know, way 4 and 5 pounds, you know, big trout. He was catching them things just as fast as he could pull them, and he wasn't really paying attention, you know, where he was putting them. He just taking them off, throwing them back in the boat, he thought, you know, get that hook and line back there just quick as he could, catch another one. So he fished 2 or 3 hours, and he figured he had 300 or 400 pounds, you know, so he decided he'd go to the fish house and weigh them up. So he eventually found the fish house and got to looking for his fish. He didn't have the first fish back there. what had happened when he'd throw them back, it was so foggy they'd swim up that fog and wouldn't go in his boat.
Oh.
But anyhow, he basically said, well, there ain't no use in this. I'm just wasting my time, you know, fishing. So he decided he'd go home. He lived up about a mile and a half up the river, you know. So he eventually found his way up there, tied his boat up, and went on to the house. And the next morning, about daylight, feller went down there and woke him up. Said, you need to go check on your boat. And you know what that thing had done? He'd rode that boat up that fog and tied it right into about a 50-foot cypress, right in the top of it. Yeah. And that thing, you know, when the fog cleared, there it was hanging up there, you know. Now, he had to go and get that thing down. He had a job now. But, you know, you're subject to see anything happening at St. Hatcher River.
Thank you, Glenn. It's Glenn Philman from Steen Hatchie. Now, Captain Ray, what kind of...
Oh, Lord, no way to top that.
He's helpless. He's helpless.
Boy, you should have went on last. I was thinking of one this morning. In my younger days, I was working for a Portuguese. I went to work for a Portuguese. And Portuguese don't believe in working on your boat. I'm sorry if there's Portuguese in there, but they don't believe in working on your boat there. So it was pretty well run down. So I went on and looked at the nets. I was shrimping it. And boy, the net's full of holes. So the old Portuguese come down and you look up at there. I'm sewing the holes up. Hey, boy. Yeah, Captain Jess. No, sew the hole up, boy. I said, Captain Jess, yeah, I said, the shrimp goes through the hole. You won't have none. Oh, no, boy. Oh, no, boy. I fished all my life. That let the shrimp in. Okay, I can't go no more right now. Come on now. Come on.
What was that you were saying about the mosquito there in Appalachia the other day? How big they were, something like that?
I said it won a... Hit out on the runway and they pumped 1,000 gallons of gasoline to find out what he was.
We got a few more minutes left in this. Unlike normal storytelling sessions, we got to end right on the dot here because other people are dependent on us to get off so they can have the stage. But Glenn, do you have about a 4-minute story? Like maybe about redfish or something like that?
Well, I don't know about that, but I can tell you another than this same old man told me. You know, I respected him because he'd sit down there, you know, and talk to you directly, you know, right where you're sitting, that old stump, you know, it'd been tree done, been sawed down for years ago. But he is so full of bull, I got noticing that his flowers started coming up out of that, you know, out of that stump there. But anyhow, I was over at his house one day, and I walked in there. He asked me, said, you hear that airplane up there? I said, yeah, I hear that thing. He said, that thing, I've been hearing it about 2 hours. I said, well, what about it? He said, well, if you don't go out there and kick that dog, he said, that plane's going to fold. I said, what you mean? And what happened, he had a catch dog, you know. That one of them old history dogs, too. And that plane, what had happened, that plane had flew over, and that dog had caught his shatter, and he was sitting there holding that plane. So I went out there and kicked it, you know, and made him turn it loose. And the plane went on in, you know, he was all right.
Yeah, you're up, man. Got one more thing now.
Okay.
All right.
It's all yours.
This gentleman promised us a case of beer. So we could tell some fish stories. He didn't get the beer, so he don't get no fish stories. You know, every beer you drink, the story gets bigger. And they try to outlie one another. So
we're going to have to meet at Miss Lily's down the road. Then, Glenn, can you tell that one about the redfish before we get off the stage?
Yeah, we got to have that one.
I don't know. I'll try. back to the same old fella we were talking about, you know. He was good at it, I'm telling you. But anyhow, you know, he got telling me a story about a redfish he'd been fooling with. And he'd hook that redfish, you know, a lot of time. And he started off with small tackle, you know, and he seen that wasn't going to work, so he went to a 60-pound or a 60-pin rod, you know. That didn't do no good. He broke that, so he went on to an 80, you know. Broke that in two. So he said, well, I'm going to wind this up. I'm going to catch that redfish. So he went and got him what he called, you know, like your old-timey winder. A winder rope, you know, you had on a winder weight, you know, to raise your winder up and down, which that cord's about the size of your finger. And he baited that hook and throwed that thing out there and tied it to a 5-gallon jug. And you know what happened? That fish swallowed that 5-gallon jug. And that redfish is still there, if any of you want to come down and try him. He's still there.
Okay. Thank you again, Glenn. And thank you, Captain Ray Singleton. And thank you, Coaster Bougier. And thank you all for joining us today. We're going to have another workshop tomorrow, talking about stories again. You can find that on your Sunday schedule. And anytime you're around a bait and tackle shop, around a fish house, on a shrimp boat, you might hear some stories like this. You might learn some, too. Coming up in just a few minutes, the Key West Junkanoo Band will be joining us very soon. So stick around for some Afro-Bahamian maritime music. Thank you all.
Boy, you